Yeah, Edward.
I kind of speak from the perspective of the Western mind, but conceptually, the idea of awareness in of itself being endgame is not something that the mind can really accept. So that for myself, I see it's only as starting to see the fruit of awareness has arisen. I can see that that it would make any sense. It's intellectually, habitually, it wouldn't make any sense at all. But even though I've seen the fruit many, many times, the doubt is so deeply embedded that I have, there's not that place of letting go.
Making that focus. Yeah, and I think that's where, as I talked about last night with the difference between a goal-oriented and a source-oriented, one of the modes of practice or a being that characterizes that coming back to a source, and particularly the source being awareness or spaciousness or whatever, it relies on trust more than it relies on intellect and comparing. So that as we become more maybe attuned or familiar with trust in and of itself, as well as the fruits of that trust, then it starts to pick up momentum, starts to gain momentum. And it takes quite a long time, really, to recognize the value in such a simple quality as trust or faith or confidence. Yes, Karina.
It's not exactly a question, but maybe. I remember something you used to say on retreats that I found very helpful. It's very simple, and it kind of reminds me of this. You said, just don't make a problem of it. It became like a little mantra for me, because, my mind would pick up cobras and say, oh, I want this to be like that. I want this.
Yeah, and sometimes those are the sort of phrases that they resonate for ourselves in some way, and they're reminders, and these are where we start learning our own, what works for ourselves, and using something like that to keep reminding ourselves, and because the busy mind is ready to. It's a problem waiting to happen. Or it's just looking for one so that it can justify itself. So then those reminders of, quit, not to make a problem. Yes, John.
I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about, a lot of the sutras, the Buddha seemed to be saying that, if there's a defilement, let's say ill will, and you recognize this ill will, you got to do something about it, right? You shouldn't just whip around.
Yeah.
And what Ajahn Chah, I quote here, or the reading you're just saying, because I found that both seem to be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't reconciled both of these.
I think one of the things is that being able to put one's attention onto what works, and you don't know what works until you actually do it and gain some experience. So it's like being willing to just doing it, and then if something works, you keep applying it. Until it doesn't work, because sometimes the mind gets inured to it, sometimes the mind needs a different angle to work with. One of Ajahn Chah's teachers, Ajahn Tonglat, when he expressed practice, practice is really easy. If the defilements come at you high, you duck, and if they come at you low, you jump over them. We tend to, God, we've got to get this technique and figure this out, and it means this, and I've got that. And that's in Tonglo. He said, you've got to get through it somehow. And, okay, what works? Yes, lucky.
Is there a state of a calm mind when you're not thinking about anything, or is it okay if you're reflecting on, your meditation? This wasn't that bad. I can think of ways to prove it.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, if there wasn't, we'd get, it'd be hopeless. We just wouldn't be able to encourage ourselves. But yes, absolutely. The mind is capable of becoming very still and clear. And then even within the stillness, the mind can be reflecting. Or sometimes the reflection itself is so focused that the mind becomes very clear. So there's different permutations of that, but absolutely the mind is capable of becoming very, very still, very quiet, and very, very clear. And of course that's why we need to develop the skills of being able to, the topic of the day of calming the busy mind. Not so much that we're trying to annihilate and destroy the busy mind so that we can get this mind, but recognizing that, the busy mind tends to be agitating and tends to be restless. And there is there is an experience of the clear mind that is possible. And developing the skills and the tools that allow us to access that. Sometimes it's, it's important to, recognize, that there is this possibility within the mind. And it's important that we have an expectation that we can do it. But it also is important it's that judging and if we're judging ourselves all the time and if we don't make the mind, utterly blissful and stable, then we've somehow failed. An obstacle. But I think it is important to encourage ourselves and to recollect the fact, we are capable of experiencing peaceful, clear states of mind. Within the range of possibility of having a human mind. And it was like the Buddha saying, if it wasn't possible to experience that, I wouldn't teach it. But it is possible, so you have to put forth the effort. Yeah, Iris.
I noticed sometimes that the mind becomes peaceful and it's not very deep, but anyway, it's peaceful. But then all of a sudden, there's this, I want to call it like a squiggle of restlessness. And I'm noticing it usually happens around almost 45 minutes, where I know that's the time that's when we meditate. And it's sort of like the body has a habit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I wanted to know what to do with it. No.
Yeah. A lot of it is just recognizing, because oftentimes, okay, there's restlessness comes up, and then there's either we follow it, or we react with aversion to it. It shouldn't be this way. So that, okay, well, restlessness comes up, and then you can just note that, and then okay, how do I work with that? Oh, right, there's that habit again, and why do I feel I have to be doing something else? There's actually, I'm actually peaceful. Now, why don't I just enjoy this? And because often we don't give ourselves permission to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're sort of busy being meditators.
I'm at home. And, yeah. You know, I don't have a bell or a clock, but I'm sitting there also to get that feeling. I hope, you know, so I look, and there's 40 minutes or so, almost 2 minutes to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, Neely. Yes, there is. And that's in the last bit of the... That's okay. We took the structure of the day of sort of right attitude, and then we're going to, actually in a couple of minutes, we'll have a bit of a bio break, and then we can have a discussion groups amongst yourselves. And then the last bit of the day will be kind of nuts and bolts tools and... Okay. Yes, Rick.
So one time, some things when you're reading in the suttas and you're trying to get the mind to be calm, or you know, and the Buddha goes through these, calm the mind this way or that way, and he goes, and then if that doesn't work, grit the jaw, beat the tongue down,
yep.
And do this, and I keep running across that phrase, it's like, well, that ain't gonna work for me, because it seems like it's an exact opposite of all the other ways that he was saying, do this or that, but if that works, then really grit and fight it and.
Yeah.
You know, and I've never like quite been able to rectify whenever he gets to that place when the other stuff isn't working.
Usually it's like a last ditch effort. And but it also that comes in the last bit of the afternoon.
Saving all the good stuff for the
saving all the good. There's a build up here. There's a little we're dangling the hooks here.
And another part that I think I learned, and this makes sense, is like you talk about the reflection part, and when sometimes I'm talking to someone, you try to meditate, and they go, I can't meditate, you know, I try to settle my mind, and I realize how busy it is, and I've used that sometimes as saying, well, that's really great, because now you're seeing the reflective quality of how your mind work, so trying to use it as a positive, that they're actually recognizing the mind because they think we get so negative on ourselves and think it's wrong, and trying to show, well, that's actually great because you're recognizing what our mind does and how difficult it is to work with.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't recognize or see a problem, then there is no opportunity for resolution.
Yeah.
So that... yeah, you're seeing, okay, you've got a starting point to work with.
By the way, are you going to talk about something about what to do with a busy mind when you're washing dishes? Six conversations?
No. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So just on right attitude, so it seems like from Ajahn Chah's teachings and from what you've said, there's several elements you can observe. So there's the quietness of the mind, peacefulness. There's the moods and everything, perceptions, everything that comes. And then there's the one who knows, right? So what's the attitude to take when we are observing all these things so we don't objectify or, you know, or make it in some way stressful?
Well, I think the attitude to be taking, or the perspective to be taking, is again... making it practical and recognize what works. What is it that helps? What feels helpful? What feels practical? So that, as opposed to, because it's easy to then, say, take it to an analytical, conceptual level. The tendency of the mind is then to conceptualize it. But it's, I think it's more helpful to come back to the experiential and practical of, okay, what does it feel like? Because that's where there'll be a natural draw to what is settling, what is feels kind of soothing, comforting, and that will that will naturally encourage us.
So to focus on results.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so we're going to break, and we thought we'd move into small groups and do small group discussions.